The U.S. Israeli genocide in Gaza continues for the 152nd day, with the death toll surpassing 30,700, mostly women and children. The Hamas resistance movement asserts that any ceasefire agreement must effectively prevent all kinds of Israeli crimes against the Palestinian people. And the former U.S. President Donald Trump secures victories across 13 states in Republican primaries on Super Tuesday, further strengthening his position in the race for the White House. This is Muse. Thanks for joining us. On the 152nd day of Israel's genocidal war on the Gaza Strip, more civilians fall victim to the regime's airstrikes. An Israeli bombing of the Al Zaytun neighborhood in Gaza City left two Palestinians dead and several more injured. The city has also witnessed another attack on the people waiting for aid, resulting in the injury of several of them. In central Gaza, six civilians, including a journalist working for the Al-Aqsa TV, were killed in the attacks on homes in Deir al-Balah. To the south, 25 bodies have been recovered from under the rubble in different areas of the city of Khan Yunis. Meanwhile, the World Food Program reported that the Israeli army denied the entry of an aid convoy to famine-stricken northern Gaza. The death toll from the Israeli onslaught on Gaza since early October has now surpassed 30,700, the majority of them women and children. The Organization of Islamic Cooperation has held an extraordinary foreign ministerial meeting in the Saudi city of Jeddah to discuss the Israeli occupation of Palestine. Gaza was the focus of the talks, with a final OIC statement calling for an immediate and unconditional end to the deadly Israeli aggression against the besieged territory.
The OIC calls for an immediate and unconditional ceasefire and cessation of the all-out aggression against the Palestinian people in the Gaza Strip, the provision of unimpeded and adequate humanitarian, medical, and relief aid, the provision of water and electricity, and the opening of humanitarian corridors to deliver urgent aid to the Gaza Strip.
The statement from the 57-member bloc also warned about the dangerous consequences of continuing Israeli genocide and the ethnic cleansing of Palestinians in Gaza. It called on the UN Security Council to take urgent measures to stop Israeli atrocities in Gaza, as well as the rest of the occupied Palestinian territories. The OIC categorically rejected any attempt to forcibly transfer the Palestinian people from their ancestral land. It said that peace can only be achieved when the Israeli occupation comes to an end.
The OIC affirms that peace, security, and stability in the region can only be achieved by ending the Israeli colonial occupation and all its illegal policies and criminal practices against the Palestinian people, and calls on all countries and international institutions to take practical steps that lead to empowering the Palestinian people with their inalienable rights, specifically their right to self-determination, independence, and return on the basis of international law and international legitimacy resolutions, and to confront all steps that undermine these rights.
The OIC also criticized some countries for claiming to be the defenders of human rights while at the same time supporting the ongoing aggression against Palestinians and granting impunity to the Israeli regime. The organization did not single out a country, but the U.S. is known for its strong political and military support for the Israeli regime since it launched a genocidal war in Gaza back in October. Tuesday's foreign ministerial meeting of the OIC was held at the request of Iran and several other members. The U.S. is piling up pressure on the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas to accept a temporary ceasefire with Israel. This is yet another attempt by Washington to back the regime after providing it with weapons and money to launch a genocidal war in the Gaza Strip.
The hostage deal is in the hands of Hamas right now.
Okay.
Because there's been an offer, rational offer. The Israelis have agreed to it and waiting to see what the Hamas does.
Biden also claimed that the Tel Aviv regime has presented a rational offer on the establishment of a ceasefire. He also talked about Israeli captives held in Gaza, but failed to mention thousands of Palestinians languishing in regime's jails for months and years without trial or charges. The U.S. president made the remarks as Egyptian and Qatari mediators are trying to find ways to hammer out a deal before the holy month of Ramadan. The U.S. has already vetoed three U.N. resolutions on the Gaza ceasefire, and has supplied Tel Aviv with military and financial support for the Gaza war. Meanwhile, Hamas underlined that the security of Palestinians will not be ensured unless a permanent ceasefire takes hold.
In the past 2 days, Hamas presented its position on the proposal by Qatari and Egyptian mediators at the end of last week. We reaffirmed our conditions for a ceasefire, a full pullout from the Gaza Strip, the return of the displaced to the areas they left, providing adequate relief and medical aid, and launching the reconstruction process.
Israel is reportedly against the withdrawal of its forces and the return of Palestinian refugees to the northern strip. December fighting was paused and humanitarian aid was allowed into Gaza as part of a week-long ceasefire. It also saw an exchange of 240 Palestinian abductees with 105 Israeli captives. Hamas has said time and again that any prisoner exchange deal is out of the question unless its conditions for a ceasefire are met. To discuss the Gaza ceasefire, we were joined by our guest earlier in the News Review program. Let's see what they had to say.
Joining us on this edition of the News Review, we have Professor of International Relations at Lebanese University, Mr. Jamal Wakim, who's joining us from the Lebanese capital, Beirut. Also from Saidiya, Morocco, we have political commentator Kevin Barrett. Gentlemen, welcome to the program. Let's start off with Mr. Wakim. We're listening to the comments by U.S. President Joe Biden, who claims that the Israelis have put forth a rational offer. I want to get your thoughts on that. How do you read into those comments by the U.S. president? And the main question here is, can the Israelis even be trusted in such a situation?
Well, of course, Biden is supporting Israel ever since it launched its aggression against Gaza. And he's supporting also all political stances and initiatives. He wants Israel to be victorious in this aggression against the resistance in the Gaza Strip, and that's why he is endorsing all conditions and prerequisites for such an objective to be achieved. This is how we can understand Biden's comments in this regard. Of course, Israel cannot be trusted, and throughout the Arab-Israeli struggle, it was only checked by power and by force, not by any negotiations or any agreement. So that's why I believe that these conditions that are put on the table by Israel are not acceptable to the resistance in Gaza, and this will drag on the conflict in the Gaza Strip, leading to more and more civilians to get killed by the Israeli army.
Mr. Kevin Barrett, I want to get your thoughts as well. Do you agree with our guest in Beirut that these conditions that are being putting forth by the Israelis in Washington are not acceptable? Why is that? And do you also see that Washington and the Tel Aviv regime, they just keep kicking the ball down further down the field?
Yeah, I think he's right. That is, that the Israelis are looking for a kind of a so-called temporary ceasefire, which would allow for all of their hostages to be released. And then, after that ceasefire is over, they would be free to continue committing genocide and pulverizing the Gaza without any kind of restraint. Obviously, that's a non-starter. The only way that the Palestinian resistance can reasonably be expected to release all the Israelis in its custody is if there's going to be a permanent ceasefire, not a temporary one. And that's the sticking point here, it seems. And the Americans, unfortunately, are seeking an Israeli victory. They are on the side of the Zionists. Biden's administration is surrounded by Zionists, and they don't want to see their side lose. They also have political problems, though, because Biden will very likely lose the next presidential election if there hasn't been some kind of durable peace. Now, what he would like to see, I suppose, would be some sort of imaginary Israeli victory. But there's no such thing. That can't happen. There's no prospective path to the Israelis defeating Hamas and getting their people back alive. It can't. That's not going to happen in an Israeli victory scenario. But they have these delusions. Netanyahu does, because if all the other alternatives involve Netanyahu leaving power and very likely entering prison, and then the Americans are really just hostages of the Zionists, and so they entertain these lunatic fantasies. Ultimately, the Americans are going to have to put pressure on the Zionists to accept some kind of permanent cessation to this genocide. That's the only reasonable way this can end, and that's the only way that Biden can preserve his chances of being reelected.
Thanks to my guest, Professor Jamal Waqim, joining us from the Lebanese capital, Beirut, and also political commentator Kevin Barrett, joining us from Saidia, Morocco. That's a wrap for this edition of the News Review.
The Lebanese resistance movement Hezbollah says it has precisely targeted a building in the Israeli settlement of Avavim with appropriate weapons, inflicting significant damage to it. Earlier, correspondent Mariam Saleh in Beirut gave us an update on Hezbollah's retaliatory attacks.
Hezbollah has also released some numbers, actually. And we're talking about 150 days since the beginning of the war. They say there's at least 2,000 Israeli soldiers either killed or wounded as a result of the continuous operations by Hezbollah. There's also huge numbers of rockets that were fired. They talk about those numbers. We're talking about here at least 5 kilometers from the border in the Galilee that have been completely evacuated. You have also Hezbollah's rocket fire reaching more than 23 kilometers within those settlements and that area. You have 43 settlements that were evacuated, and at least 230,000 settlers of the Israelis have been evacuated and have been displaced from that area. Since the beginning of the confrontations, you have also Hezbollah has mentioned that they have targeted and perhaps destroyed some 68 vehicles, 38 command centers, and 283 fortifications. And of course, they're in addition to the espionage devices that they have also destroyed, the technological hardware for the Israelis. We're talking about some 300 in addition to 570 residents or settlements that are built in those settlement areas that were destroyed by Hezbollah. So you have very significant numbers for that were issued by Hezbollah. Of course, Hezbollah has said 2,000 Israeli soldiers have been killed or wounded, since they cannot really verify how many were killed. But they have also said that any number that is given by the Israeli army is inaccurate, and it is usually much more than what it is.
The U.S. decision to airdrop food to starving Palestinians is being seen by many as a tactic to give the impression that America cares and that it is a goodwill gesture. But the move is likely to backfire, as the current U.S. administration is under fire at home and abroad over its support for the Israeli genocide and for blocking U.S. resolutions on the Gaza ceasefire. To the U.S., where it is a joyous occasion for the former President Donald Trump, who has increased his lead further on Super Tuesday. This is the day when the outcome of the Democratic and Republican primaries in 15 states and one territory typically shapes the race for the White House. Addressing his supporters in Florida, Trump hailed his wins as unprecedented.
Thank you very much. They call it Super Tuesday for a reason. This is a big one. And they tell me, the pundits and otherwise, that there's never been one like this. There's never been anything so conclusive. This was an amazing night, an amazing day. It's been an incredible period of time in our country's history. It's been sad in so many ways, but I think it's going to be inspiring because we're going to do something that, frankly, nobody's been able to do for a long time.
Trump's sole Republican challenger, Nikki Haley, is far behind, as she has won only in Vermont. Trump has won at least 890 delegates to date, while Haley has secured fewer than 70. That despite the former president is facing a number of lawsuits. In the Democratic camp, the incumbent President Joe Biden is cruising toward nomination as he swept in all 15 states on Super Tuesday. Biden remains the frontrunner for the Democrats as he faces no real challenger within the party. He gears up for a likely rematch with Trump in November. Meanwhile, Biden said in a statement that a second Trump's term would be a return to, quote, chaos, division, and darkness. Earlier, we spoke to Gloria La Riva, activist and political analyst in San Francisco. She told us that most Americans are shocked to see Trump and Biden competing for the presidency again, despite doing nothing while at the White House.
The sentiment among many people is one of disgust and basically shock that it could be the same two candidates who have had proven records of doing nothing to help the people of the United States and instead carrying out wars on Biden's part, the war in Ukraine, funding by hundreds of billions of dollars, and then financing, tripling the amount of aid, military aid, to the genocide that Israel is carrying out. And Biden buying time for Israel in its attack on the Palestinian people. But on the other hand, let's remember that in 2020, September, was the Abraham Accords, which Trump was behind, in which it was normalizing the relationship of Israel with several Arab countries, including UAE, Bahrain, Morocco, and eventually Saudi Arabia. That was only stopped recently or paralyzed for a time by the resistance that began with the Al-Aqsa flood of October 7. But the choice is really very, very dire. And that's why, actually, there are several third-party candidates who have arisen who are getting quite interest in the U.S. public. Of course, they will not get the kind of publicity on national television that Trump and Biden will get.
And that does it for World News. It's bye-bye for now.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
The Limelight. The United States, Israel's biggest ally, has provided the Israeli regime with a raft of arms and ammunition since the war in Gaza started last October. The United States has also vetoed a number of UN Security Council resolutions that have called on the Israeli regime to cease its aggression in Gaza. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The Wall Street Journal has covered this story and tells us more. The administration of U.S. President Joe Biden is reportedly preparing to send tens of millions of dollars worth of bombs and weapons to the occupied Palestinian territories in continuation of Washington's untrammeled support for the occupying regime's months-long war in Gaza. Citing unnamed U.S. officials, the Wall Street Journal reported on Friday, 16th of February, that the proposed arms delivery includes MK-82 bombs and KMU-572 Joint Direct Attack Munitions, or JDAMs, which add precision guidance to bombs, and FMU-139 bomb fuses. The report cited an assessment of the proposed arms transfer drafted by the U.S. Embassy in the occupied city of Al-Quds as claiming that the Israeli regime had requested rapid acquisition of these items for its continuing war in the Gaza Strip. Citing a U.S. official who said the details of the proposal could change before the White House notifies congressional committee leaders who would need to approve the transfer, the American Journal added, the proposed delivery is still being internally reviewed by the Biden administration. Since December of 2023, Washington has twice skipped congressional review of weapons sale to the Israeli regime as the regime's brutal aggression against Palestinians of Gaza lingers on for more than 4 months, with well over 100,000 Palestinians dead and injured. According to the U.S. Journal, President Biden has provided roughly 21,000 precision-guided munitions to the Israeli regime since the start of the war last October. The report said the remaining weapons are enough to sustain 19 weeks of bombing Gaza, but that would shrink to days if Tel Aviv also launches a full assault on Lebanon, from which the regime has come under harsh retaliatory attack by the Lebanese resistance movement Hezbollah. The arms transfer comes as President Biden claimed on Friday, 16th of February, to have been repeatedly pushed Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu for a temporary ceasefire in Gaza. In defiance of widespread international calls, the Israeli regime has insisted on an imminent launch of a ground invasion of Rafah in southern Gaza Strip. Rafah houses some an estimated 1.4 million Palestinian refugees. Out of a total of 2.3 million population of the Gaza Strip. The United States, Israel's biggest ally, has provided the Israeli regime with a raft of arms and ammunition since the war started in Gaza last October. The U.S. has also vetoed a number of UN Security Council resolutions which called on the Israeli regime to cease its aggression in Gaza. The Intercept has also covered the same story and tells us more. U.S. Campaign for Palestinians' Rights in a report stated that every year the U.S. government writes Israel a blank check for at least $3.8 billion to fund Israel's violence against the Palestinian people. The U.S.-based pro-Palestine advocacy group, U.S. Campaign for Palestinian Rights, stated, rather than using those funds to provide for American communities in need, our government uses taxpayer dollars to enable the Israeli military to massacre Palestinians, destroy their homes, and steal their native land. Code Pink, a women-led grassroots organization working to end U.S. wars and militarism, also recently issued a global call on the United States to stop funding the ethnic cleansing of Palestine. The statement by Code Pink read, the slaughter and daily assault on Palestinian human rights being carried out by Israel is an unacceptable use of U.S. taxpayer dollars. We demand an end to U.S. collaboration in the ethnic cleansing of the Palestinians. The statement added, U.S. taxpayers pay Israel over $10 million a day, and Israel uses that money to inflict violence all over Palestine. We call you to halt this aid and demand that Israel stop its assault on Gaza, its evictions from eastern Al-Quds, and its attack on the Holy Al-Aqsa Mosque. John Schwartz, writing in The Intercept, said he had been wondering how much money he, as an American citizen, contributed to Israel's occupation of the Palestinian territories and attacks on the Gaza Strip. John Schwartz wrote, "So how much have I chipped in to create this hell on earth? The best answer I've come up with is $150, adding that it could be either less or more. John Schwartz added, "You can figure out your own contribution if you want. Add your income taxes to any federal bonds you bought this year and multiply that number by 0.004. According to a March report by the U.S. Congressional Research Service, Washington has sent Tel Aviv a total of $158 billion in bilateral assistance and missile funding since 1948. At the same time, the United States and several other Western countries have stopped their funding of the United Nations Agency for Palestinian Refugees, precipitating a humanitarian crisis in the besieged Gaza Strip. The British newspaper The Independent has also covered this story and tells us more. President Joe Biden sears his name in history by becoming the first sitting American president to be sued for complicity in genocide over the United States' abetment in the Israeli regime's ongoing genocidal war against Palestinians in Gaza. The first hearing in the case was held at the federal courthouse in Oakland, California recently. Human rights organizations and Palestinian U.S. citizens are plaintiffs in the lawsuit, which was lodged by the Center for Constitutional Rights, a New York-based legal advocacy organization, in mid-November. The Center for Constitutional Rights filed a lawsuit on behalf of Dr. Omar al-Najjar, a physician at Al-Nasser Medical Complex in the city of Khan Yunis in southern Gaza Strip, as well as Palestinian human rights groups Defense for Children International, Palestine, and Al-Haq. The lawsuit also names U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin and the U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken. The United States has been providing the Israeli regime with all-out military and political assistance. It has armed the Israeli regime with more than 10,000 tons of military hardware and blocked ratification of the United Nations Security Council resolutions that have called on the Israeli regime to cease its aggression in Gaza. The lawsuit states, if the legal responsibility to prevent an unfolding genocide is to mean anything, indeed, if the rule of law is to signify anything, courts of law must have a role and responsibility to enforce these foundational international law principles. The lives of so many people are at stake.
علي حبه جنة قسيم النار والجنة وصي المصطفى حقا إمام الناس والجنة.
The Gate of Knowledge. Exegesis and interpretations of the supremely eloquent sermons, letters, and sayings of the Commander of the Faithful, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him.
You're listening to the program Gate of Knowledge with Sheikh Mukhtar on IRIB English Radio.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين. Dear listeners to IRIB English Radio. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I welcome you all to this episode of The Gate of Knowledge, where we are discussing about the topic of a guide for managers based on the teachings of Imam Ali alayhi salam in Nahjul Balagha. We are currently focusing on the 53rd letter, which is a letter that has a lot of points with regards to leadership and management. And there are certain pieces of advice, or you can say certain commandments, that Imam Ali alayhi salam has placed in them with regards to how you deal with those workers or civil workers or government officials or officers that are there in sensitive positions. And he says that he gives various advice. One of the pieces of advice that he mentions is that he says that you need to keep spies and allocate spies for these people so that they do their work well, and so that they deliver properly, and so that they know that they should not, for example, misuse the funds and the budget that they have. So this is kind of a motivation for them to avoid misusing their position. And in fact, if anyone has experienced a leadership position, he will tell you that the chances of slipping are high. And that's why if there are certain spies who are taking care of you, and taking care of how you act and work, in fact, it's a positive thing that can give a lot of benefit.
You are listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio, a program that presents a detailed commentary of Peak of Eloquence from the Master of the Faithful, Imam Ali, peace be upon him.
Now, Imam Ali alayhi salam also talks about certain workers that are, you can say, that are assistants of a very high level leader or position. For example, there is a president, or there is a minister, or even a prime minister. He has certain assistants that are next to him. وَتَحَفَّظْ مِنَ الْأَعْوَانِ Imam Ali alayhi salam says that be careful, or protect yourself, or kind of take care, take extra care with regards to those that are those close, you can say, assistants that you have. وَتَحَفَّظْ مِنَ الْأَعْوَانِ Why is he saying that? He's saying that, for example, there's a group of people, for example, there's a leader or someone, and those close people that are next to him, they sometimes end up influencing the leader himself. They end up influencing, let's say, that manager himself. And therefore, Imam Ali alayhi salam is telling him, because of the possibility of such a negative influence, a person who is in that position needs to be always careful. He should always be vigilant with regards to these assistants that are next to him. And he should also kind of be careful about them. Not that he should have a negative mindset about them. For example, there are some people who are negative about everyone. You know, they're just when they're in that position, they think everyone is trying to attack them, everyone is causing disturbance for them, and everyone is bad in their eyes, or, you know, things like that. No, we're not saying that. We're saying just be careful, take care, be vigilant. And that is for the good of the people themselves, in fact. And even when you are vigilant, Imam Ali says that do not make a quick judgment with regards to these assistants just because of one or two reports. There should be many reports. So for example, he says, وَتَحَفَّظْ مِنَ الْأَعْوَانِ That be careful about those close, you can say, assistants. فَإِنْ أَحَدٌ مِّنْهُمْ بَسَطَ يَدَهُ إِلَى خِيَانَةٍ So, he says that if one of these assistants, he opens his arm towards treason, that means he does something, he does treason basically. He either cheats, does treason, steals something from the budget, or makes a wrong decision that is going to harm, not as a mistake, like a really intended wrong decision that's going to destroy the future of the people, then you need to take some action. Inshallah, we shall discuss about this in the after the break.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad.
Nahjul Balagha, translated as the Peak of Eloquence, is a compilation of sermons, letters, and sayings that reflected Imam Ali's profound insights on governance, ethics, spirituality, and social justice. Sayyid Razi's meticulous work in preserving and presenting Imam Ali's words has made Nahjul Balagha a timeless source of inspiration for scholars, theologians, and seekers of wisdom.
Now, Imam Ali Rasam says, فَإِنْ أَحَدٌ مِّنْهُمْ بَسَطَ يَدَهُ إِلَىٰ خِيَانَةٍ. If any one of these close assistants that are next to the leading position, let's say, let's say the minister or the prime minister or the president or someone who is holding a sensitive position, has got these workers around him, these assistants, of course, that are helping him in different activities. These are helping hands, basically, that are helping in executing affairs. He says that if these people, if one of them, let's say, commits treason or cheats or does something wrong, اجتمعت بها عليه عندك أخبار عيونك. It should be such that this treason should not be reported by just one or two spies. No, it should be a lot of spies. Many spies, let's say 6, 7, 8 reports from different spies that work for you, that are trustworthy. They refer to you and tell you that this person is committing treason. He's making these wrong decisions. He's oppressing people. He's doing that. When you get all of these multiple reports, then he says, take action. اكتفيت بذلك شاهدا. That is enough for you as a witness. You as a leader, when you get all of these people, all of these very trustworthy spies, all of them telling you something about this person or this assistant of yours or this person who is working under you, then you take, you can, this is enough as a witness for you. That means as a witness for you to be able to take action. And he goes on to say, فَبَسَطَّ عَلَيْهِ الْعُقُوبَةَ فِي بَدَنِهِ. You can take even physical action against him. Physical action means that corporal punishment can be given. So you can see how Imam Ali alayhi salam is serious in his management. He's saying, if there is treason and it is proven to you by the spies, you as a higher level authority in a government can also take corporal punishment as a measure in trying to stop this bad or evil action to happen by those people who are using, misusing that position. Let us pray to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala that you can take these messages seriously and apply them in our lives. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Sheikh Mukhtar in the program Gate of Knowledge on RIB English Radio.
قال النبي محمد من كنت مولاه هذا علي سيد فاز من ولاه هو بالكتاب مسدد والنور معناه باب العلوم ومرشد هو آيات الله من ناداه أو لبه حين دعاه نال منه هو في الشدائد منجد والفضل يمنى هو في المحاسن أحمد والوحي رباه.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day, from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day, from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. Now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
In the limelight.
The U.S. Supreme Court could rule on Donald Trump's Colorado ballot eligibility just one day before the state's primary is set to open. We take a look at the U.S. media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The American newspaper The Daily Beast has covered this story and tells us more. The Supreme Court signaled it will issue rulings on Monday, 4th of March, an unusual declaration that indicates it may have made the decision already on the high-stakes question of whether Colorado may legally bar Donald Trump from appearing on the state's primary ballot. On its website, the Supreme Court said it will release an order list on Monday, 4th of March, the day before Colorado's state primary is set to take place alongside several other states, a primary season event known as Super Tuesday. The High Court said in a statement on its website that it may release opinions beginning at 10 a.m. on Monday, 4th of March, but won't take the bench. The court typically issues its rulings from the bench, and the unusual note could reflect the expedited timeline on which it heard Donald Trump's immunity case and the decision's extremely sensitive timetable. The Supreme Court justices are not scheduled to take the bench again until 15th of March. Donald Trump is currently set to appear on the Colorado ballot despite a ruling made by the state Supreme Court, which declared that Trump is ineligible to run in the race because his role in the January 6, 2021 Capitol riots amounted to an insurrection. The state ruling has been on hold while Donald Trump appealed it. The Supreme Court held oral arguments in early February in the case, which hinges on the assertion that Donald Trump is barred from running for office under Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, otherwise known as the Insurrection Clause. That provision was originally added to prevent ex-Confederates from holding U.S. office after the American Civil War on the grounds that they had broken their oaths to the Constitution and acted against it. Donald Trump's lawyers have denied that he participated in any insurrection and have argued that the president doesn't constitute an officer of the United States, as written in the text. That defense didn't sway a panel of Washington, D.C. judges in a separate immunity case, while the Supreme Court has also agreed to hear. A ruling, if it lands on Monday, could determine Trump's eligibility to appear not only in the Colorado race, but in a number of other states that have attempted to bar him from their primary and general election ballots, including Illinois and Maine. The national broadcaster ABC News has also covered the same story. The Supreme Court says it will release one or more opinions on Monday, 4th of March, a day before the Super Tuesday primaries, in an announcement widely expected to resolve a dispute over states' ability to remove former President Donald Trump from the ballot under Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. The Supreme Court had not previously been scheduled for a public sitting, when traditionally decisions in cases argued during the term would be read aloud and handed down. The justices will not take the bench, according to the High Court's website. Opinions released on Monday, 4th of March, will be done electronically. Last month, the justices heard expedited oral arguments in Donald Trump's appeal of a Colorado State Supreme Court decision that would ban the former president from the 2024 ballot for his efforts to overturn the results of the 2020 presidential election. A majority of the justices at the time appeared highly skeptical that an individual state has the authority to deny a candidate for federal office from the ballot as an insurrectionist, as Colorado did. A decision in Trump v. Anderson would come one day before Colorado voters head to the polls. While Donald Trump's name is already on the ballot there, the ruling could determine whether votes for Donald Trump could be counted and would bring clarity to the High Court's view on a 150-year-old constitutional provision and attempts to enforce it against Trump nationwide. Bloomberg News Agency has also covered the same story and tells us more. The U.S. Supreme Court hinted it might rule on Monday, 4th of March, on efforts to bar Donald Trump from the presidential election ballot in Colorado, adding a new opinion day to its calendar, just as voters prepare to head to the polls in Colorado on Super Tuesday. The court never says in advance which opinions it will issue on particular days, but it has handled the Colorado ballot case on an expedited basis, and a ruling on Monday, 4th of March, would provide clarity about Trump's eligibility before Colorado's Super Tuesday Republican primary. The announcement of a new opinion day over a weekend is unusual, all the more so because the justices aren't taking the bench on Monday, as they normally do for rulings. The Supreme Court revealed the new opinion day on its website. The Colorado Supreme Court ruled that Donald Trump was ineligible to appear on the ballot because of his role in the 6th of January 2021 riot at the Capitol. The ruling was the first to bar Donald Trump from the ballot under the Insurrection Clause of the Constitution's 14th Amendment. The Colorado court put its ruling on hold, meaning Donald Trump could appear on primary ballots, while the Supreme Court considers the issue. A state official in Maine and a judge in Illinois have also declared Trump ineligible to appear on the primary ballot, though those decisions are also on hold. Arguments in February suggested that the Supreme Court would let Donald Trump appear on the ballot. The Colorado ballot case is one of more than 30 that have been argued but not yet decided in the Supreme Court's current term.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,865 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird Eutelsat 3B and Iran Sat or Bat 5 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more.
You're listening to Hadith of the Day on RIB English Radio with Sheikh Ammar.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. We've been discussing about the Hadith which explains about the qualities of Shia. And the first point which is mentioned in this Hadith from Imam Sadiq alayhi salatu wasalam, there was wara'. Wara' means piety, being pious, and we're going to discuss a little more about the wara in the other ahadith of Masumin, other sayings of Masumin. There's another hadith from Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam, who narrates from Old Testament that Prophet Muhammad said, it has been said in the Old Testament, the Torah of Musa, and the hadith goes like this: fit Torah Musa alayhi salatu wasalam, la aqla ka ad-din wa la wara'a kal kaf wala hasabaka husnil khulq. Well, he's trying to say there's in the religious part, there's intellect is the top, is the head of the religion, and wara, being pious or piety, is la wara'a kal kaf. There's a no piety except you, or just like you just stop yourself from doing anything wrong. And wala hasabaka husnul khulq, and there's a no lineage, because lots of people say, I'm the son of that, and I'm son of that family, I'm son of that tree, I'm son of that tribe. So this is called in Arabic hasab, means when you explain yourself or tell about yourself, introduce yourself through your lineage, your ancestors, your tribe, your country, your land. Well, this is in a summary called hasab. Prophet Muhammad is saying in this hadith, narrating from Old Testament, he says, وَلَا حَسَبَكَ حُسْنِ الْخُلْقِ. Good ethics, good morals, good attitude, it is the best of best lineage. This is the best thing which introduces you. So the first point he says is, لَا أَقْلَكَ الدِّينِ. If you want to be religious, use your intellect. Mainly intellect's job is preventing self from doing wrong things. This is aql. Aql, usually we think, if I'm very smart, I'm intellectual. No, this is not the meaning of aql. Aql means when you are in a way, you don't know which way you have to pick. Aql says, always go to the side of God, which is going to connect you to your eternal life. So, la aqla kad-deen means if you want to be religious, you have to be intellectual. Means protect yourself, prevent yourself from doing wrong things. Number two, wala wara'aka al-kaf. You want to be pious, you want to use piety in your life, always prevent yourself, guard yourself, watch yourself. Don't see things which is not meant to see. Don't speak things which is not meant to say. So the point is here, guarding self, preventing one from doing wrong things is wara. And that is the top. What is the top quality of wara? What is the top quality of piety? When you totally control yourself and your surroundings from doing anything haram. And the last part of the hadith is, وَلَا حَسَبَ كَحُسْنِ الْخُلْقِ. The best of best lineage is your good attitude. It's just like perfume. If you talk about perfume and say, this perfume is very good, the water is from there, oil is from there, this is from there. No, you don't have to explain about the ingredients of the perfume. Just open the bottle and people will feel which is correct, which is not correct. Here, the same thing is here. لَا حَسَبَ كَحُسْنِ الْخُلْقِ means, when you talk, when you show your good attitude, when you show your good manners, then it will say to others that you are people of God and you are people of wara. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad wa salam alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Sheikh Ammar in the program Hadith of the Day on RIB English Radio.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد.
Bring us out from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi.